Hello, this is Laura Adler, and today we'll be mapping obesogens on the 15-minute matrix.
Welcome to the 15-minute matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today, I'll be talking with my good friend, Laura Adler. Laura is an environmental toxins expert and educator and a certified holistic health coach who helps health professionals better understand the links between environmental chemicals and their impacts on disease states, from weight gain and diabetes to thyroid disease and infertility, so that we can better support our clients and patients. Laura takes a practical, real-world approach to dealing with toxins that's informative, accessible, actionable, and free from overwhelm, which I think you'll hear in our discussion. Let's get started. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you, Andrea, for having me.
Yeah, Laura and I are trying to control our laughter. We were laughing before we got on the line here, but we are talking about something that is no laughing matter today. We are talking about obesogens. So let's just start the conversation, Laura, by explaining what obesogens are.
Yeah, so obesogens are a class of chemicals that are linked to, in a couple of different pathways, to changes in our metabolic function that can lead to things like insulin resistance, resistant weight loss, weight gain, diabetes, and ultimately obesity. So it's a class of chemicals that's the term obesogen was coined in 2006 by Dr. Bruce Blumberg. So it's a relatively new term, and there's a new field of research that's exploring the role that these chemicals may be playing in the increasing rates of metabolic disorders that people have. That's super widespread right now.
And when you say chemicals, give us some examples. Like, what would act in our environment as an obesogen?
Yep. So some of the pesticides that we're exposed to through our food, so organophosphate insecticides, organochlorine pesticides, things like flame retardants, bisphenol A or the other bisphenols like bisphenol S and F, which are in our plastic products and our canned foods. Phthalates, which are in our scented products, whether it's a scented candle, an air freshener, or shampoo. Even heavy metals like arsenic, cadmium, and lead are being implicated as being obesogens. And then more common substances like nicotine and high fructose corn syrup and even MSG. These are some of the chemicals out there that we're being exposed to throughout the day that have data that's implicating them as being obesogenic chemicals.
So when we think about this through a functional medicine, a functional nutrition perspective, certainly what you're talking about are loads of triggers. There could be lifestyle triggers. There could be things in our house, in our environment, really acute exposures. But when we go back and we go back to, let's say, our time in utero, what might we be exposed to from our mom? Is that something that we could be having obesogenic exposure in that time of life?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And in fact, all of those chemicals that I listed have been measured in umbilical cord blood. So we already know that infants in utero are being exposed to hundreds and hundreds of chemicals, synthetic man-made chemicals, including ones that have been banned for decades because they're persistent in the environment. And so we know that there are fetuses are being exposed throughout their entire development in utero to these environmental chemicals. Not all of them are obesogens, but all of the ones that I just listed off are ones that we're being exposed to in utero. And depending on the timing of the exposures, and that's going to vary from person to person, the implications are drastic, they're dramatic, and including this realm of altering metabolic set points. And so even in utero, you know, what our mothers were exposed to, and in many instances, and this sort of slides into the epigenetic realm, what our grandparents and great-grandparents were exposed to can lead to outcomes in adulthood for the offspring that point towards metabolic issues like weight gain, diabetes, and obesity.
So I'm definitely going to want to look at or talk into briefly what we do for ourselves, but also as people who are thinking, working with people who are thinking of conceiving, what they can do to detox and prepare their bodies. But let's go into those implications a little bit, go into what I call the soup of the matrix, which is that central part on the functional nutrition matrix, where we look at all the biological systems and how they interact with each other. You're talking a lot about hormones and neurohormones. What do we see happen as a result? What signs, symptoms? You talked about diabetes, obesity. What else might the obesogens impact?
Well, this is the tricky part, because in addition to being obesogens, a chemical, for example, like an organophosphate pesticide or bisphenol A are linked to hundreds of different health conditions, whether it's autoimmunity or thyroid problems or learning disabilities, behavioral problems, neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. So there's, you know, implications that even prenatal exposures to some of these chemicals increase risk of neurodegenerative diseases in adulthood. And so it's not just weight gain and obesity that's a result of being exposed to these chemicals. And I think that, you know, this is where the matrix really comes in handy, or at least the way to conceptualize it, is the way that a, quote, symptom or effect is going to manifest in one person versus another is very likely due to that person's weak link in what's the hole in their fence that's kind of letting these things through, and what is their history. So I think that, you know, whether bisphenol A exposure results in reduced IQ or alterations in behavior or genital birth defects, these are all things that bisphenol A exposure can result in, or obesity, it really just depends on A, the timing of the exposure, what week during fetal development, if we're talking about it from that perspective, and then where's the hole in the fence for that individual person that might cause that symptom to present.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. Laura, you and I have talked about these issues for a long time. And I know at one point when you started doing this work, it wasn't as common to talk about the environmental inputs in the realm of alternative medicine, functional medicine, integrative medicine. Now it's a cornerstone of the conversation. We realize that we cannot ignore the environmental inputs. We can't ignore detoxification as part of the whole picture of health. But how do you see people actually dealing with it or addressing it from a practitioner perspective?
Not nearly as much as they should.
Right.
not nearly as much as they should. So I think that what I would love to see, and what I definitely have seen a shift towards as more and more people, particularly in the practitioner space, start understanding this conversation about environmental health, what I'd like to see is people working towards the goal of what I call practical avoidance. You know, the reality is that we're all being exposed to these chemicals in some form or another, and many of those exposures are unavoidable. And so, you know, rather than adding a whole nother dimension to the matrix, which is stress, which we don't want to think about that, right? We don't want to add that in. You know, I really encourage people to focus on the changes that they can make in their daily lives on a practical level to reduce our exposures. And that ultimately means making different choices while we're shopping, in the food that we're eating, and being proactive about things like filtering our water. And, you know, what I love about the health practitioner community, and particularly the audience that you work with, Andrea, is that these are you know, boots on the ground lifestyle practitioners that are doing a lot of handholding in helping people transition from, you know, regular food to a diet that's more supportive of, you know, what's happening for that person and what their goals are. And so we're perfectly positioned to be able to extend that conversation and talk about household cleaners and laundry detergent and personal care products and taking off your shoes when you walk in the door so you're not tracking in lead and pesticides and other heavy metals and chemicals from the sidewalk. It's not just about dog poop here. It's about stopping the flow, steady flow of chemicals into our homes and into our lives. So I really think that that's ultimately what the goal is. And that comes from a foundation. We're able to do that when we have a foundation of understanding what I call the what, where, how, and what now. What are these environmental chemicals? How are they affecting us? Where are they found? And what do we do about it?
So I want to get into more of that, what do we do about it, and start with the stress or stress reduction piece, because people can get super overwhelmed. But for practitioners, in talking to their patients, first, there's like two sides of the coin, or it's a little bit of a continuum. On the one side, people don't even realize that some of the things they're exposed to every day are impacting their signs, symptoms, and diagnosis. And on the other side, people are so freaked out about it that they're paralyzed. They don't know what to do. So let's just start with that first side that I mentioned, that side or that edge of the continuum where we as practitioners have to educate our clients and patients that this actually matters, that what they do and what they buy and what they drink out of and eat off of and sleep in and on, it matters.
Yeah.
What's your biggest tip there?
The biggest tip is to really position what it is that we're wanting to share through the lens of whatever is the challenge that your client or patient is struggling with. And, you know, the upside, if we can think of it as this, is that there is an angle or a lens for nearly every chronic health issue, because environmental chemicals have their fingers in nearly every chronic health issue. So if somebody's dealing with autoimmune conditions, then we talk into the way that environmental chemicals are linked to autoimmune issues. And we say, look, you know, if we're working together to, you know, put your autoimmune condition in remission, and we're doing all this work on our diet and our stress management, part of what we're going to have to also do is start looking at what we're being exposed to, because those things can contribute to flare-ups in our autoimmune symptoms. Same conversation if somebody's dealing with weight issues, if somebody's dealing with allergies, asthma. We want to push it through the lens of what is the client or patient currently struggling with, so that it doesn't feel like an outlier. So we're not going, okay, today we're going to talk about shampoo, because that connection is meaningless for people. And so when we can create that bridge, I call these bridges of relatability, we want to walk across the bridge that they're on, whether it's autoimmune or digestive health or any other health condition, walk across that bridge with them, and then take them where we need to go into this conversation. So I think really that's the first thing, is we need to have that bridge.
Right. I always think of that as the patient is the CEO. So their goal is the one that we have to be in service to. And then we work as educators to help them see how all these different diet and lifestyle modifications, which is really what you're talking about, are in service to their outcome and vision. So we have to be educators, or make sure we have an educator on our team. So let's dive into a little bit more of that nutrition and hydration place, since that's my favorite place to talk about. What are the top things that you would be looking at or recommending to all of us as practitioners to think about in order to reduce the obesogens or the exposures?
Number one, start getting rid of the plastics in your kitchen. So plastics, whether it's BPA plastic or non-BPA plastic, all plastics leach estrogenic compounds. That's compounds that mimic estrogen in the body. These are obesogens. And the leaching or migration of these compounds into our food and water increases in the presence of heat oil, acidity, and abrasion. And so, you know, if we, this is the common, everybody's got the orange stained Tupperware. You and I talked about this 100 times before. Yes. And that orange stained Tupperware got that way because it was in contact with probably a hot, oily, and acidic food like tomato sauce or pasta sauce. And what happens is the physical line that divides when the plastic container stops and your food starts to blur. And what you end up with is molecules of oil physically embedded in the structure of the plastic. And that's why you can't wash it. And the inverse of that is we get molecules in our sauce. So it's just sort of a demonstrable way to illustrate how these chemicals are migrating. And so, you know, we can't get rid of all plastics, period, because that's just unreasonable. But what we store our food in is important. And what we cook with our food in, you know, no black plastic spatulas, no cheap plastic in the kitchen, and systematically start phasing that out and opting for glass storage containers and wood and stainless steel utensils. And that's it's a slow process. You know, we do it when we can. So that would be number one. And that would extend to, you know, plastic drinking cups and plates, all that stuff should go. It's just another sort of vector in the exposure equation. From there, I would really encourage people to consume as much organic food as possible. And there's some really fascinating research that shows that when people switch from a conventional diet to a mostly organic diet, not even exclusively organic, they're able to drop the circulating levels of pesticides in their body by 80 to 90% in a 3 to 5 day window. So that's just like this beautiful example of how our body knows what to do if we give it the chance. And giving it the chance means opting for organic produce as much as possible. And then from there, I would say filtering our water. Our drinking water is not as clean as it can be, not even close. And there are, whether it's, you know, chemicals like chlorine and the disinfection byproducts that are produced by chlorine, or fluoride, whether it's added or naturally present, right? Fluoride targets specifically thyroid. So people that have autoimmune conditions or any kind of thyroid problem absolutely want to make sure that they're filtering their water to remove fluoride. So those are sort of the primo things, action steps that I think that all wellness practitioners, regardless of your modality or people's modalities, should be engaging with their clients in conversation around food, around plastics, and around drinking water. And that's really just the start of the conversation.
Yeah, there's so much more to talk about, Laura. I know in 15 minutes, we can't cover everything. And I just want to say where the work we do really does hold hands, kind of like plastic and tomato sauce, where we do need to remove these things and bring in the healthy items. And we need to really focus on detoxification. And detoxification, like you said, it's something the body knows how to do. But we as practitioners need to make sure that our patients are doing it. They're not going to get better if they're not pooping, if they're not sleeping, and if they don't do the necessary cleanup that they need to do in their life and in their environment. So, Laura, thank you so much for talking to us about obesogens and how we can work as practitioners to start to educate our patients about cleaning up their worlds.
Thank you.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes Gilbert Nakayama, that's my son, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at www.15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to get my therapeutic diet matrix and be notified each time there's a new podcast episode, please go to www.15minutematrix.com/diets. That's www.15minutematrix.com/diets. And we want to know who you'd like to hear on the podcast and what you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix. You can email us with feedback and requests at ask@15minutematrix.com. And by the way, if you're familiar with the Practitioner Training Division of the Functional Nutrition Alliance, I want you to know that we're rebranding. What you may have known as Holistic Nutrition Lab is becoming the Functional Nutrition Lab. Stay tuned for more details on why we're rebranding and what it means for you.
There's one more pearl that I want to share, mostly because it's fascinating and the health professionals among us will nerd out on this. So these obesogenic chemicals have the ability to activate something in the body called the PPAR gamma receptor, which is our master regulator of fat cell development in the body. And activation of this receptor actually changes the programming of our fat cells. So if PPAR is activated when a cell is in pre-development, so a stem cell, it actually changes the outcome of what that cell will become, turning it into a fat cell instead of, say, a bone cell. And there's interesting research that shows that this seems to happen in place of bone cells. So it's basically taking stuff out of the bones or what would be bone cells and turning them into fat cells. And so this leads to an increase in the number of fat cells in the body. That on its own can lead to weight gain. If a cell is already a fat cell, PPAR gamma activation will increase that cell's capacity for fat storage, and that fat cell can become larger. So activation of this receptor can lead to larger fat cells and more quantity of fat cells. And interestingly, this is the same receptor that gets activated during when people take pharmaceutical medications that have a side effect of weight gain. So a lot of these chemicals are working on that exact same pathway. I did jazz hands after that. Your thing said to smile, so I smiled and then I did jazz hands.
Okay, awesome.
You didn't need to know that.
I did, because that's going to be the outtake at the end.
Oh, I should just stop talking.
Okay, awesome.
Right.
We're done.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.